This podcast is brought to you by Contessa Digital.
You're listening to Things They Don't Tell Her. Everything you don't get taught about periods, pregnancy, and postpartum. I'm going to take you on a journey back to sex ed and teach you what really matters. Ladies, it's time you felt empowered in your bodies. I'm your host, Caitlin Pender, founder of Her Women's Health, and I'm sharing tips to optimize your fertility, pregnancy, and postpartum journey. Hello, mamas. Thanks for tuning in. Today's episode is going to be a very personal one where I share with you what's been going on in my own pregnancy journey. I'm joined by my beautiful friend Amy, the founder of Natural Birth Co., to discuss the ins and outs of my own pregnancy journey and how I have been supporting myself through this time. So thanks, Amy, for joining me.
Pleasure to be here.
I'm really hoping that I can share some of the things that I've been doing, both from my professional expertise as a pelvic floor physio of like how I'm supporting myself through pregnancy, but also being someone who's worked on the Sunshine Coast in this industry for so long. I feel very fortunate to know the people that I know who provide the right support and know where to go to look for that support, that information. So I'm hoping that today our conversation just can share some of that information with other first-time or second- or third-time mums that are on their own pregnancy journeys.
How exciting.
That's right.
So how many weeks are you now?
I'm 20.
Amazing.
Yeah.
20 weeks, bang on halfway. So how was the journey for you in the first trimester? How was the nausea? How was the tiredness? How are all of those sort of symptoms?
Yeah, so I feel, you know, I feel like in one sense, definitely one of the luckier ones. I really feel for all of those who have horrendous like hyperemesis and stuff. I feel like I was probably pretty stock standard in the sense that I found out and then I actually went on a family holiday right after that and I felt great, thankfully, for that first like couple of weeks when I was on holidays, felt really good. Definitely was navigating in that time just, you know, moments of fear because of the miscarriage last time. It was like, you know, sometimes I'd be like, oh my God, my boobs don't feel sore anymore. And then you'd think, oh no, like, am I still pregnant? And just that, you know, being pregnant again after miscarriage, there's just that fear at the back of your mind, which I just had to constantly just trust and know that, you know, it was going to be okay and reassure myself and just not let those thoughts consume me.
Yes. It'd be so easy to consume.
Oh, yeah. Mm. Totally. Especially because I had just all the time in the world. We were just on a liverboard boat in Indonesia and I was just like hanging out with my parents.
Yeah.
So I think I was just trying to enjoy that as much as I could. And then when I got back, the nausea started and the nausea was awful. But just, you know, constant. And I definitely managed to navigate it. I know some people it can be really, really rough. So I felt like it was manageable. But it's only now that I feel good again that I'm like, oh, that was horrible.
Yes.
At the time I was like, yeah, it's fine.
Yeah.
But it was like just, yeah, just the constant feeling of not feeling well. And what I found was I definitely felt that when I was eating, so like eating constantly,
it was so constant. We had a trip at the time and I just remember thinking like everywhere we went you would take a snack for the road and I just remember realizing all of a sudden how constant it actually is to snack all the time. And yeah,
And it was like, because I felt good if I ate, so I just had to eat all the time. And I remember like reading, oh, you're not meant to increase your calorie intake. That's where I was like, yeah, well,
who wrote that?
How can I not do that when I feel sick if I don't eat? Like,
yes.
But I definitely did find, and I'd read this and heard this from like naturopaths and stuff before, just the because obviously you often just crave like white carbs.
Yes.
But I did find some, I think there was a few times that I just got like hot chips or fish and chips, and like I actually felt worse just like with that plain carb.
Mm.
But when I had a proper meal with like, you know, proper whatever, proper food, like some protein and fat and carb combined, I definitely felt that I'd felt better for longer.
Definitely.
Just having, you know, potato chips.
Yes. Do you want to reel off a couple of the amazing snacks that you had during that time? Because you had such a great variety, I remember. And, yeah, I feel like that would be helpful.
Yeah. So my go-to snacks, those one was like those yogurt pouches like yes. that you see kids having. I've never thought I'd be having those, but I was like, these are easy. And I love yogurt, and I was like, this is just easy, quick, protein, fat.
Yes.
Bang. Celery sticks with like nut butter was a good go-to. What else? God, it feels like a lifetime ago, even though it wasn't. I definitely snacked a lot on like even those little mini cucumbers that you buy from Coles. They're so good and juicy and fresh, and obviously everyone has different things that they can tolerate and can't tolerate. But I was lucky enough that I was I didn't really feel like food, but I could still eat most food.
Mm-hmm.
So I could kind of – usually I'd like pack so much food in the morning, which I wasn't used to, because before I was pregnant I was just like a 3-meal
yes.
solid breakfast, solid lunch, solid dinner gal. And then all of a sudden I was like, I have to eat like – I think I went back to work after the trip to Indo, and I basically hadn't gone – like I'd gone maybe between two clients, like, I don't know, an hour or something, and I hadn't eaten anything, and I went and vomited. I was like, holy moly. Yeah. And that was the first time I'd vomited, and it was because I hadn't eaten in an hour or two. And I was like, okay, no, this whole thing about snacking – this must be for real.
I've got to take it seriously.
Yeah. So then I was like, okay, I've got to pack, and I'd get like anxious if I couldn't access my snacks. So I was like, oh my God, I've got to be able to eat food, access snacks. Like,
must have a bar in my pocket at all times.
Yeah, muesli bars are so good. Like good nut muesli bars. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think what else I had. Muffins. I think I made some good like banana, hemp seed kind of blueberry muffins.
You did. I remember you also made some balls.
Oh yeah, bliss balls. Yes. Yeah. One time I did a big cook up, and then just like nut mix or even like a piece of fruit is always good. But sometimes I'd put like just some nut butter on it or something
because
I did feel like having that protein as well just meant that like I lasted like an extra maybe half an hour before I needed another snack.
So true.
Oh, it was crazy. I was eating so much all the time.
Amazing. Amazing. So that
I found helped a lot. And the nausea, the other thing that I definitely found was I felt like the nausea was a lot worse if I was stressed.
Mm-hmm.
Because sometimes, and not always, but definitely sometimes, like I remember having time off over Christmas and I feel like the nausea was a lot better and I wasn't vomiting at all. And then when I came back to work and we were looking at selling our house and like buying a new house, and I just felt like – and then I was vomiting a bit more. And I don't know if – like who knows if that's just like the timing of that or if the stress – because I guess cortisol is a hormone.
Mm-hmm.
But whether there was some impact on the stress, because occasionally when I felt well enough to drag myself to like a yoga class or do a meditation or something, I did feel like the nausea was a bit more at bay.
Interesting.
Potentially.
Very fascinating.
And okay. The other thing, that I did in that time for the nausea was mm-hmm. I got some acupuncture, and my amazing acupuncturist, Grace from Bloom, and I'm going to leave a heap of links in the show notes to like heaps of resources that I found helpful and podcasts and people mm-hmm. and practitioners, but I did get the leave-in acupuncture needles.
Yes, you did too.
Yeah.
They worked a treat.
I do think they helped, even if it was placebo.
Fuck yeah, we're about the placebo.
Because one of my girlfriends had used the bands. She'd got those mm-hmm. like seasickness bands in her first trimester and swore by them. And when I'd been on the boat in Indonesia, my brother's girlfriend was wearing the bands for seasickness. Mm-hmm. And like she gets really bad seasickness. And one of the days she took them off and she was like, oh no, it's come back. And she was like, she swore by the bands as well. And I was like, oh, these band things. But then I was like, it was the middle of summer and they look like sweatbands. And I was like, oh, I don't know about those.
Yeah.
And the needles like just do the same thing. It's because essentially the bands are just pressing on an acupressure point on the wrist. Mm-hmm. And the leave-in needles were pretty much the same. Yeah. So definitely think maybe there was a bit of help there or a bit of a placebo, but who cares? It still gave me peace of mind that I was doing all the things that I could in that time to try and combat that.
Amazing. Nausea. What about the tiredness? Did you get affected by it and how'd you deal with it?
Yeah, the fatigue was like nothing I've ever felt before. And that was definitely, that didn't hit for quite a while. I know some people get that really, really early. But I felt like that probably came on around 10 weeks.
Mm.
And then I just felt so physically exhausted. And, I had to be much more mindful of how I expended my energy through the day.
Yes.
I was like, it feels more like now my energy is a battery. And if I, because sometimes I'd feel good and I'd be like, I can get up, I can go and do some exercise. But then if I did that, it was like depleting half the battery and I'd get to work and by like 10 o'clock, I'd be like, I can't go on.
Yeah.
I'd have to lay down in between clients. So I started to be like, okay, this is, even if I feel up to it, I just have to be mindful that my energy is like a battery and if I drain it in the morning, I'm not going to have any energy in the evening.
Mm. Which is such a different way of life from what you're used to. That would have been hard to accept.
Oh, definitely was. And I was like, okay, I do still know the value of being able to do some movement if I feel like I can, if I can you know, manage the nausea. And so I would just do more stuff at home, like mm-hmm. short. I might do just 10 minutes of yoga practice at home or 10 minutes of Pilates at home or just some sort of movement to feel good. And I know a lot of people, like so many people, just cannot muster doing anything in that first trimester, which I can completely understand and sympathize with. But I actually felt like the movement did make me feel good, but I just had to be mindful of it not depleting my energy. So I definitely lent into yoga a lot more because that felt like it recharged me much more. And surfing, oh my God, especially with the nausea, I just felt like the ocean was the only cure.
So good. It made you feel better surfing, laying on your belly even.
So much better.
Wow.
I know. I just think, just being in the ocean, I just felt refreshed. I don't know.
So good. So what is amazing? I feel like it's not
think that, but
refreshing, but I think it's also something to do with like,
I don't know. Yeah.
Maybe the energy maybe balance and electrical balance.
Distracted.
Yeah. Yeah. Amazing.
But I definitely felt sometimes when I went out in the ocean, it helped. I came in and I felt so much better.
So good. So good. I think you're also trying to milk it before your belly got too big. Definitely. Yes. Yeah. Okay. Fantastic. So we've done nausea and we've done that fatigue. I reckon while we're talking about physical fitness, talk about what you've been doing for that through your pregnancy, and you were talking about like the benefits of it and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Obviously, as a women's health physio, you have lots of thoughts on that.
Yeah. So, oh God, I feel like I could talk forever on this.
Yes.
Yeah, I know the value so much of movement, and I think it's very easy if you are feeling like shit in the first trimester to just, you know, I remember getting home from work sometimes and I just wanted to lay on the couch, but honestly sometimes when I did do that, I would just feel worse, and I would almost, I think it was almost like I was concentrating then on it, like it's... Mm. I, you know, I'd feel okay at work as long as I was snacking every 20 minutes, but I'd get home and it would hit, and but it was like all of my focus was on like, oh God, that feeling, oh, and then that kind of just, you'd concentrate on it. And I just felt, you know, if I could bring myself to go for a walk or to get outside and especially have that fresh air on my face. I'd often take my yoga mat down to the sandbags in Cotton Tree where you can just, you know, pop it on there and you're pretty much out a little bit in front of the ocean and just get that breeze on my face and mm-hmm. just do like a tiny bit of movement, and I would just feel so much better afterwards.
Amazing.
But I definitely lent more into... because I think, you know, as I was saying with energy, it is really important that we're mindful of that change in energy and just acknowledge how much our body is actually doing. So I think while there's still value in movement, we shouldn't be pushing ourselves to, you know, go to the gym or do a hardcore movement practice mm-hmm. if that's not what our body can tolerate. And it's not like, you know, I was really conscious if I did even go to a Pilates class or a yoga class or even for, you know, maybe went for a couple of runs really early on and just, okay, asking myself like during and then afterwards, how do I actually feel?
Mm-hmm.
And making sure that each time afterwards I still felt good and I didn't just feel like, oh man, that was like all my energy.
Mm.
Oh man, I feel rubbish now. But if we can stay strong, we know there's so many benefits to physical activity in pregnancy. Like, I think I was reading something the other day and it's like, you know, it's just changed a lot. Like our grandparents' generation, it's like they're pretty much encouraged to just do nothing. Don't exercise, don't get your heart rate up, rest as much as you can. Mm. And even I have like a 97-year-old neighbor because we've moved, not because he's but he was like, you know, Caitlin, you should finish up work soon, like this is so early on, like you need to rest more, and you know that and I understand that mentality, and I think that we, you know, we have lost some element of that and now women are like forced to work for so long, and mm-hmm. it is so hard what we expect women to do now. So I think we need a bit of that softness back. But, you know, we know now from the research that there's like more benefits. If you have an uncomplicated pregnancy, there's more benefits than there is negatives. And it's almost like a risk not to exercise, because we know that being sedentary can have, you know, so many more implications for the health of the mother, the health of the baby. So, I think if we can manage to find a form of exercise that we enjoy the most, and I think, you know, sometimes with a pregnancy and with this access to information, there's like always like do this, do that, do this. Mm. You should do this for this. You should do this for this. This is the best thing you can do for your body. But I think realistically it's like, what brings you the most joy? What movement do you enjoy doing? What's sustainable for you? If you love, you know, going for a bike ride or going for a walk with your girlfriends, then lean into that. If you love doing Pilates classes, or you know, see how it feels, and then lean into that. Because we know that there's so much benefit to maintaining physical activity, and even if you're not well enough in the first trimester, then that's okay too. But once you can start to feel up to reintroducing some movement, even if it is just like a YouTube video on at home, 10 minutes and like, you know, just roll out your yoga mat or, you know, whatever you like doing, get hand weights or go for a little walk, just whenever you start to feel good enough to do that again. And then for exercise, I've definitely fluctuated. So in that first trimester, I've got a membership to ClassPass, which is like, it's really hard to explain what it is if you haven't used it, but it's basically like a membership to, you can have lots of different studios on there that you can go to, and you don't pay a like a weekly recurring membership, you just have points. And so I found that quite helpful in the first trimester, where some weeks I'd feel like I just cannot get, I can't get to a class. And I think a lot of people who are going through that, they then end up cancelling their gym membership or their fitness membership because they just can't go, but then it's then they don't go at all. Whereas with ClassPass, you still accumulate those points. And so if you don't go for a week, then the next week, if you feel up to it, you might be able to go to a couple of different classes. And, you know, there's so many options on there in terms of like there is some Pilates studios and some yoga studios and some spin classes and some gyms. And so like if I had the energy, and I used to do this a lot with my cycle, even like you know, when I was ovulating, I'd go to a spin class and I'd be like on top of the world, and if I was on my period, I might go to a yin class, and I just, that was basically all I could do was lay on a bolster. So I think that kind of having that flexibility in terms of access to classes early on, where I wasn't really having to modify anything, I could still lay on my tummy. I was still pretty comfortable doing most things. I would say, interestingly, like doing core work in the first trimester actually made me feel nauseous.
Interesting.
I don't know. Like, I mean, we know that it's still safe to. I don't know if it was, you know, a psychological thing or whether other people experienced that as well, but I certainly felt like it just didn't feel good. It actually made me feel really nauseous, especially things like, you know, where there was a lot of flexion in the abdomen, so like crunches and just didn't, even though I could safely do them, I didn't feel the urge to. So that was really good for my first trimester. I felt really good leaning into just doing a lot at home. And I think there's so much benefit as well in pregnancy to doing stuff at home because, you know, when baby's here and having a baby, like our windows of opportunity to be able to get to fitness classes and gyms and stuff regularly, it's just not always possible. And so becoming more comfortable and learning to enjoy doing something at home and setting that up as a bit more of a routine, and maybe even getting a bit of equipment, like some bands or a ball or whatever, and finding, you know, like the videos, you know, with all the physio stuff that I offer, they get like a little, you know, 10-minute video that they can do here and there. And I think, you know, now being pregnant myself, I'm like, oh, that's great. Like,
so handy.
10 minutes is perfect. That's sometimes all I feel like I could do, but you know, if I can do it at home, I can. Sometimes I feel tired in the morning and really energized in the evening, or sometimes it's the other way around. So I can do it when I feel good. I can do it in my own time. And I have learned to enjoy doing that exercise at home. And then once I hit that sort of end of my first trimester, I started going to pregnancy classes.
So
I was kind of like, I was just so excited to be able to go into a more pregnancy-focused class. And I think when you're that early on, you don't necessarily, you don't feel, you know, that you necessarily need to physically. But I was like, oh, I want to go to Amy's classes.
We were just so excited, hey?
Yeah, and I was like, and there was so much benefit just to being around all these pregnant women and not having to think. Like, it's easy for me, you know, with the knowledge that I have to be able to modify a class.
Yeah.
So that it feels really good to not do like really deep twists or really deep back bends in yoga. And to, you know, not do a lot of flexion based core work in, Pilates, but then I have to use my brain so much more, and it's just so nice to be able to switch off. And, you know, in a pregnancy specific class, you don't have to think at all. So I just think, it's so nice to be able to go switch off, know that the class is so catered to pregnancy, and even just like, especially with yoga, like the meditations and stuff are all about your pregnancy journey and your belly and your baby and the birth sometimes. All these different things are threaded through, whereas, you know, I still enjoy going to regular yoga classes, but there's just a different enjoyment that comes from that time than kind of consciously connecting with your baby and and also, I guess, being around other pregnant women, like getting to know other pregnant women and meeting other women, which I think lots of women can easily keep going to other like general studio classes, but underestimate the value of finding that community through a pregnancy-specific class.
It is very underestimated, isn't it? Even I underestimated the value of having the community. Like I remember it just started as like a casual – oh, let's stay for cuppas after. But then I didn't realize, like, that's kind of half the reason a lot of people stay now. I didn't even like the classes. They just leave after cuppas. No, but I was wondering, I have been wanting to ask you after our chat about pregnancy meditations a little bit ago.
Yeah,
I think it was maybe the next class you came to where I did – so, sorry, for those at home, Caitlin was chatting about how she wants to do pregnancy meditations, but out there they're all about birth. And she wanted some more specific towards the pregnancy and the changes in pregnancy. So it was a Wednesday class. I don't know if you remember, but I did a meditation at the start of yoga about what was it about?
I do remember that, and I remember thinking, oh, this is nice. It was so much more focused to like
– oh, sorry. Pardon me, I remembered. It was letting go of this old version of yourself. And yes, it's going to be different, but that's okay.
Yeah.
And that was because that was another – that's a conversation I have actually with lots of pregnant women. But, yeah, that's what it was about. So I was going to – did you like it?
Yeah, I loved it. Yeah. Nice. And I think while we're on that subject, one thing that I have found interesting is I think that – when it comes to pregnancy support, there's just so much information about birth, and everything seems to be like obsessively focused on like the birth. Mm-hmm. And you want to, you know, find information and feel, you know, do things that are about the journey and not just the end kind of thing. I think it's so nice to, like, knowing that this is, you know, I might be pregnant a couple of times in my life, to really enjoy each phase. And that can be really hard in the first trimester, a lot easier now. But, you know, rather than just all the focus being on that end goal, and I think also having done my doula training and already working in the industry, I know a lot about birth already. So I was like, do I just want to know more about enjoying each season, and also, yeah, as you said, like navigating that change of like loss of identity and this kind of concept of like moving from maiden to mother, especially being first time pregnancy, it's like there is going to be shifts. Like, you know, I'm not going to be able to book a random holiday to Indo and just like drop everything at the last minute. I'm going to have to plan my life a bit more, and there's not going to be that same level of flexibility with certain things, and that's okay to mourn that. And the things that you kind of lose in that process, this version of yourself that you were for so long, that's going to be changing into a mother.
Absolutely. And you can be so wildly grateful and excited for something while also mourning what it loses at the same time. They can coexist, and I think sometimes we feel guilty if we're feeling upset about something because it means that we're not grateful. But no, you can absolutely be both at the same time, hey?
Definitely.
So I want to hear about your thoughts on the model of care you've chosen and what you feel drove that decision making for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, such a good question. One I want to dive into because I think we, like, I was fortunate enough to understand and know the different models of care before I fell pregnant. But a lot of women aren't. And then it can be quite difficult to navigate later on. And then it's like the choice is made for you.
Yeah.
So for anyone who's early on in their pregnancy journey, or maybe like second time, or even, you know, maybe there's still time, you know, there's lots of options on the Sunshine Coast. And I think the biggest thing that I've learned through, you know, what current research says and talking to you and talking to other people is that so much of it is about continuity. Like a support system, it's so important to feel like someone is getting to know you and they're going to support you. They're going to understand your values, who you are as a couple, as an individual, you know, what your values are, what your goals are, like what you really want out of the birth and also out of your care, and getting to know you as an individual. And then also reciprocated, like you feel like you're being looked after by someone and that someone is there for you and that you could pick up the phone if something, you know, if you were worried about something or, you know, I've had a previous miscarriage. So that, like, if something happened, if I started getting bleeding or like if I felt something and I wasn't sure, that I could just contact my person
or and my team. Know.
And they know me. And it's like, and it just is that trust that you've built. And so there's lots of different models of continuity, and fortunately there is a few on the Sunshine Coast. The over the years, like, there's definitely – so there's, I guess, there's private and there's public. So when it comes to private, you've got Budrum Private, which, you know, from what I've heard is a pretty old school – like the actual hospital is old, so the build is old. Maybe some of the rooms don't have birth pools. I'm not 100% sure on that.
I can't quite remember, to be honest.
But it's just like a bit of an older facility. But, you know, I have heard there's some really good obstetricians there. Customara, I've heard amazing things about. And, again, if you have private health and you feel most comfortable going with obstetric model of care, then awesome, because then you're still going to get that continuity. You're going to get to know that obstetrician. You're going to feel supported by them throughout the process. And I guess, you know, one of the benefits to that model and to going private, if you feel really comfortable and supported and your safe place is in a hospital, like, you do get that longer stay postpartum where you, you know, you get your own private room and you've got that support. And because the public hospital these days just seems like in and out, so busy, you can't stay more than, like, you know, a couple of days if you're lucky. And so if you want, if you're someone who wants to be there, getting that support, having lots of midwives that you can call on if you have any questions, any dramas, you know, in that setting, then that's definitely, you know, potentially a good option to explore for you. Then there is public, and Sunshine Coast Uni Hospital is meant to be amazing, and you work there, so I think we're so lucky. The birth suites there are beautiful. We're so lucky to have that as our public hospital, because it's a beautiful new modern facility. And you can get into the MGP program, which is like that continuity model. Unfortunately, so many women don't get in because either their GP hasn't put them in early enough or they just didn't know about it. So they end up in like what's called a fragmented care model, like where they basically just have appointments with different midwives every time. God, and sometimes I have clients that are like 26 weeks and they have only had one appointment, and it's like they're just not followed up at all. And if anything happens and they feel concerned in their pregnancy. They just have to show up to emergency, which is not a nice place to have to go and wait and freak out and not feel like there's anyone who's looking after you.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's unfortunate that that is our, you know, primary model of care that most women will go through. But then for some women, they're lucky enough to get into an MGP program, which is just where you get put in a group and you have one primary midwife, but I think a couple of others that kind of follow you through, and you'll be guaranteed that one of them in the group will be at your birth. And I think if you can put your name down that for that and get into that early, then there's definitely some benefits to that and some good outcomes to having that continuity. But the model of care that I've chosen is to go through a private midwife. So the midwives that I work with are all amazing. So I work out of that Coast Life Midwifery building, and there's a lot of amazing private midwives on the coast. When you have a private midwife, essentially you're paying privately. So it is a lot more expensive. Like, obviously, if you go through the public system at SCU, I don't know. I think there's still maybe the costs of, like, some of the tests.
I think some of the scans only, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But fortunately, I've been going to the radiology clinic and they bulk bill all the scans.
What? Yeah. Which one's that? Tell us.
It's across the road from the plaza.
X-ray and imaging?
No, the radiology clinic. It's called the radiology clinic.
Is it actually?
And they bulk bill.
Oh, mamas, look it up.
Mm-hmm. So I feel like all the money I'm saving, I'm just putting towards my private midwifery care.
So good.
So basically, yeah, with the private midwife and with the program, particularly with these like group practices, you get assigned, you know, you get to pick your midwife, and then, you know, there's a group that they'll work with. So if for some reason they can't be there or if they're away, you know, they might end up chatting to someone else, but you kind of get to know the team. And throughout the pregnancy journey, they do education sessions and you get put in a group with a whole bunch of mums that are also birthing at the same time as you. So you get to know this group of other women, and then I think you do one group session a month for, 6 weeks. for however many months.
Yeah.
But you do a number of group sessions of education, getting to know these other women together, learning all about different things for birth and for the pregnancy. And then you have your midwife's number that you can call anytime that you're concerned or have a question. And they do everything. They, you know, send for the bloods, refer you for the ultrasounds. And that model of care, so with the Coast Life midwives, they're all actually endorsed at SCU, so you can choose to birth through the hospital with them.
Yes.
We're planning a home birth, and I think off the top of my head, like, the costs to birth at SCU, it's like maybe $4,000, but that's for all of the continuity through pregnancy and the group sessions, the birth, and then also 6 weeks of home visits postpartum. And then for the home birth, it's more like $5,000. So it is an expense, but having worked in the industry for a long time, I really have realized that it's just so worth every cent. Like, you know, you think about what people spend on a wedding or what people spend, like, you know, if we were going to go to we're going to go to Europe for a holiday this year, potentially, not now, but you know, we would have spent probably $5,000 on flights return for, you know, for the two of us. And we wouldn't have, like, it would have just been, that's just what it is. But I think it's really hard. Like, I've had friends who have gotten pregnant. It's really hard to explain to them how beneficial that can be and, like, why they should pay the money, because they just think, well, I can get it for free. But as you were saying, like, you know, what you said before, that, yeah, but the, like, what you actually get is so different. The standard of care that you're getting, it's not like comparing apples and apples. You know, what you're actually getting is what you pay for. and definitely there's still, you know, there's people that have great experiences through the public system and have, you know, such amazing luck with the midwife who's on shift or the mm-hmm. midwife who they are assigned through that program. But there's also lots of women that don't. So mm-hmm. it's just more, you know, you think we're fortunate to be in the position where we can afford it and there's lots of people that aren't. But I think it's also about like what your money, like what your values are, because people, you know, people say they don't have money to do things and then all of a sudden they buy a new car or like, mm-hmm. you know, they do something that, you know, it's just where the money is going, and that is so based on what you value. Mm-hmm. And if people could see the value, mm-hmm. and a lot of second time mums do, mm-hmm. a lot of second time mums go back and choose their care providers very differently. But if you can see the value of spending that money so that you get the support mm-hmm. and so that you feel like you have someone that you can call who looks after you, who knows you, who gets to know you through that whole process, regardless of the birth outcome, mm-hmm. and then supports you, comes to your house postpartum, like allows you to, you know, feel supported and you know that they're going to be there throughout that whole process.
Yes.
It's worth every cent.
And the thing is, it's so hard, and I couldn't agree more. I feel like people, especially if they haven't had a baby before, it can sound a little bit like, oh, yeah, but I'll be fine, as in the support, because they don't quite understand. But when it comes down to the studies, absolutely everything says that continuity of care in itself, which a big part is due to the support, you have more natural birth experiences, less intervention, less birth trauma, less, you know, episiotomies, pelvic floors, epidurals, inductions, cesareans, all the things. Every single thing is less.
Yes.
When you use continuity of care model, especially private midwifery care mm-hmm. is what I'm talking about when I say that, yeah. by the way. Yeah. Absolutely. So that I totally couldn't agree more. But if you're wanting a normal low intervention birth, that is where you're going to be most likely to get it by, you know, tens and tens and tens of percent.
Yeah. And I'm like, as I said to you, like I think it's just so much more than that you're actually paying for. It's like,
yes.
you're paying for that support. You're paying for, you know, you get such long appointment times, like that. Mm. Our appointments, every appointment's an hour, sometimes an hour and a half. It's like,
amazing,
you know, and it's just because you're really getting to know each other. And in the public system, unfortunately, they just don't have the time for that. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we are lucky in Australia compared to some other countries to have, you know, good healthcare system. Mm. But even if we look at, like, you know, the New Zealand model of care for the maternity system, and even some, like, you know, in the UK and in some European countries, like, we're just miles behind.
Yes. Although the difficult thing there is that those midwives are cooked. They are so burnt out that it is really hard. I don't know the answer to that, but it's tricky. One other thing, though, that I wanted to touch on that you mentioned for clarity is when a private midwife, you're registered under APRA because you've done your normal midwifery registry degree. To be a private midwife, you get endorsed, which is another whole year or year and a half of doing a course. But then to get, what's the word you said, so that they could be in the hospital? It's late and I'm mind blanking.
I think they are endorsed at SCU.
Yeah.
Admitting rights.
Yes. It's just important. What my whole fucking point is of this is that it's important that if that's important to you, that your private midwife can continue to look after you as a midwife. If you need to be transferred to SCU, you need to look into that beforehand.
Yes.
Because the majority of private midwives can't keep looking after you in the hospital.
Yes.
All the ones at Coastlife can, and some others definitely. But if that's important to you, then you need to ask that question as well at the start.
Absolutely. And I think that just comes down to, like, yeah, what's important to you? Where do you feel safest?
Yeah. 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 But then obviously if something was to happen at the end of your pregnancy, which It can.
Yes.
But you have to birth at school. You don't want to be absolutely just like freaking out because your midwife can't midwife you anymore.
Yeah.
Or if they can't, they can always be there as a support, as like a doula, but you'll have to be looked after by an actual midwife. And that it can be great.
That happens, yeah.
But you have to be okay with that beforehand.
Absolutely.
That may pop up as a potential. Do you have any other thoughts in regards to model of care?
I think at the end of the day, just having that information available because so many people don't know that.
Mm-hmm.
Don't know the options, don't know what's available.
Yeah.
You know, don't know what the costs are associated with it or like what sort of things they get for that. And maybe everyone they know is just birthed through the public system, so they have no idea that there's other options out there.
That postnatal support is so helpful for breastfeeding as well, just by the way.
Okay.
So helpful.
And just having someone come out to your house because otherwise, you know, in an obstetric model, you know, you do get to stay in the hospital longer, but then once you're home, like, that's it.
Mm-hmm.
You're on your own.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas knowing that, like, in that early phase, they'll just come out whenever I need it and, you know, that I'll have those check-ins, that they'll support me, and a few of them are IBCLA, like lactation consultants, and they'll help the breastfeeding and they'll check stitches or whatever needs to be checked, just knowing that someone is there to do that as well. Just reassuring.
So good. What about your prenatal supplements?
Prenatal supplements, yeah, okay. So food. So what I ended up doing – initially I was on, I think it was Trezos prenatal supplement, which is a really good supplement. Or I think there was Natura Best as well. I was on that one for a bit, but I actually thought that the supplements were making me nauseous. So
yeah, I remember that.
And then, even when I stopped feeling nauseous, I remember one morning just going, okay, I wonder if I can take this now. And I took it and I definitely felt nauseous. So I was like, no. Done with those.
Yes.
So what I kind of decided, and I've been working with Talita, who's an amazing naturopath in Coolum, just on things that are specific to me. So I've had blood work done in my first and second trimester, and the supplements that I'm on are just specific to the things that I need to support. So I think at the moment I'm taking like a DHA and choline supplement that's based around like fish oil, then a zinc supplement because my zinc levels were quite low. I'm taking an iron supplement now because my iron was really low, but I'm taking Bioheme, which is just what my naturopath's recommended, and it's a iron biglycinate, which I've heard is meant to be a lot better for gut reaction.
I've heard that too.
Yeah, and every second day. Because that's what all the research says around absorption.
Interesting.
So I'm taking that every second day. I'm taking some beef liver capsules as well, just to hopefully help with my iron. Let me think, something else. I think, yeah, something to support my liver, a herbal supplement from the naturopath. So I'm not taking a specific prenatal at the moment. We're covering the bases.
So good.
Through that. And I guess with the, you know, folate, getting that naturally through like the beef liver. And I will, yeah, check my levels again, but they were all good last time. So.
And you get folate through a lot of foods as well. I can't even remember. Sheridan was talking about it the other day, but it's in normal cruciferous and stuff
vegetables.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So unfortunately we've been able to have like a good diet.
Yes.
I haven't been throwing up that much and I've been able to eat regular food and kind of crave just my normal healthy diet. So that's been easy enough. One book that I would highly recommend is a book called Nurture the Seed by this amazing dietitian who's down in Newcastle. Who also has an amazing Instagram, so check her out. But the book is just such a, like, it's so aesthetically pleasing, and it just kind of goes through a lot of stuff around like what are the nutrients that are actually important in pregnancy and what are the food sources of those nutrients, you know, both for vegetarians and non-vegetarians. And she talks about, you know, natural like probiotics and how we can get that through our food and our gut bacteria. And there's just lots of really good information in there. And I'll link a few of her podcasts because even in the first trimester I listened to, I think she does one on the Boob to Food podcast and one on another podcast, and talks a lot about food health safety standards in Australia and just busting some of the myths around what we can and can't eat in pregnancy. Because I feel like women find out they're pregnant and then it's like, okay, well, I guess I can't eat cheese and I can't eat this and I can't eat that.
And no eggs, which is obscene, by the way.
No runny eggs, yeah.
Yeah.
And another good book is Real Food for Pregnancy. But and even just the – there's a few podcasts I'll share that are by the author of that book, and she talks about the fact that a lot of the studies show that the women who are actually like obsessive with following these kind of foods that we should avoid actually end up with more nutritional deficiencies. So, you know, is there actually – it's – Renee talks a lot about risk versus reward, like – particularly for something like eggs, you know, we know choline and folate are so important. So we absolutely don't want to not eat eggs because there's so much benefit to them. You know, can we make sure that they are pasteurized eggs and that they're bought from like a good quality place? And even, you know, now I actually just do the egg float test thing, you know, putting them in water and stuff.
Oh, okay.
I'm cooking them.
I've not heard of this.
Never heard of that.
No.
You've never done that.
No. What are we talking about?
So you just like put your egg raw, like in the shell, in a bowl of water, and if it floats, it's bad.
Oh,
most of the, like they always sink.
What does bad mean?
It's no good.
As in, like it's off, or it's got.
Yeah.
Oh. Okay. Cool.
Yeah, my mum used to do that though.
Interesting. I've not heard of this before. That's a fantastic trick.
I like. I don't think I've ever had one that's actually floated though. But like,
interesting.
That's because the quality of eggs in Australia are.
Yes.
Are pretty good.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I've definitely still, you know, I think it's also just working out what's aligned to you and what your beliefs are around food. But I like to get as much as I can from my food. Like I'd rather than take a supplement, I'd much rather get it from food sources. I think I do understand that in pregnancy, like, there's such a high nutritional demand and it is very hard to get to meet those daily requirements through our food. So I can understand the place of a supplement, but I would always much rather try and get that through my diet and through real food. So kind of knowing what foods are going to be helpful and also not having fear around certain foods, like definitely like, you know, still eating soft cheeses and stuff. But, you know, Renee talks about which – you know, obviously if you buy something from the supermarket, especially something in brine, like in oil, you know, the risk of having foodborne illness is so, so low. Because the food safety standards in Australia are so high, I think the only things that I haven't actually been eating is just raw shellfish.
Okay.
So like oysters and
prawns.
Yeah.
Probably fair.
Yeah, but and you know, if I went to a market, I probably wouldn't buy like unpasteurized cheese and eat that. Like, and if I went to a picnic and I was, you know, the cheese had been sitting out for ages, I probably wouldn't eat that either. No. It's just like using your brain a little bit more,
yeah,
but not having like fear. Oh, I can't eat that because I'm pregnant.
Yes, yes. The only other thing I'd say is like sushi trains. Just order sushi fresh rather than off the train.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Or don't eat it at all. Do what you want, but that's what I would do.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I don't go to sushi trains, but
yeah,
absolutely. I think like, you know, even with that sort of stuff, it's like.
I just had a postnatal mama actually. She's the one that you looked after in birth and she got really sick of a sushi train, which I just remember saying to her. I think it was her. I'm pretty sure, and you knew this was ages ago, but I remember saying to her, I was like, thank fuck it was postnatal and not in pregnancy.
Oh my God, yeah.
Because that was the first time that I kind of heard of that actually happening.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so, I mean, and there is the risk, and it's just what your risk.
Yeah.
Like, you have to decide that as an individual. But I don't think, like, we don't have to just follow blanket rules for everything. It's worth sometimes thinking, okay, well, this is what the recommendations are, but what level of risk tolerance do I have?
Mm.
You know, what foods are important to me? And, like, what actually is the risk? Like, the risk of salmonella from certain foods is so low. But I'll share a few of these podcast recommendations in the show notes, because I think, you know, I'm not a dietitian, and I've just sought the right information from someone that I know, like, and trust, you know.
Yeah. This is all just, like, our opinion, isn't it?
Yeah.
Our thoughts. Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah. Yeah. Amazing. Well, what about now in pregnancy, 20 weeks pregnant, you've done all this so far, you're not feeling as nauseous anymore, not feeling as fatigued anymore. What are your thoughts moving forward? Where are you kind of at the moment?
Yeah. So now I'm in just, like, such a nice phase. Yes. I feel like I'm just trying to really enjoy this season.
Yeah.
Of the pregnancy, because I feel like I have energy. I've started to feel baby's movements. I feel sick, and, you know, I've started to get a bit of a belly, so you can actually kind of, you know, it's a bit more obvious that you're pregnant, and it's just a bit of a nicer phase to be in.
Yes.
And the things, I guess, that I'm focusing on, I think it's just, I'm trying to, like, honor how special this time is, because, you know, even if I have another pregnancy in the future, it'll be so different experiencing this journey with a toddler.
Oh, yeah.
Or with a kid. So I'll never get to have this first time pregnancy journey again. So even though life can be busy and we can kind of get swept up in our day and not even, like, completely forget that we're even pregnant. Mm. I think you do this always in yoga, like, is you bring us back to the fact that, like, you know, we're on this journey, like, what, just spend a moment, like, connecting with the fact that there's, like, a little human growing inside of you.
Magic.
Which I think is just so nice. So just trying to really enjoy that. And I think going to classes is a nice way to do that. I'm trying to, you know, get out there and meet other pregnant women who are due sort of at a similar time to me, who, you know, I might be able to hang out with when I'm on maternity leave and get to know more and kind of establish those friendships now in pregnancy with people that I feel like I have stuff in common with, not just at, like, a random mother's group that the hospital puts you in or something. And exercise. I've really been enjoying going to reformer classes and just modifying those slightly. Haven't been for a surf in a while, and I don't know if my time surfing is over.
Oh,
could be, don't know.
You'll have to give it a go.
Yoga, I've been loving. I definitely find I'm a lot your body doesn't recover as quickly, and so I have been getting a lot tighter. For a while, I was going to some bar classes and did notice that my pelvis was starting to get, like, a little niggle at the SI joint, which is kind of like the little dimples in your lower back, and that's quite common in pregnancy. So I was like, oh, okay, this is a little, like, I think when we're pregnant, it's so easy, I think, for the general population just to go, this is just like a normal pregnancy thing, right? But I think so often they're just like little whispers from your body of, like, okay. So I felt like, okay, that's a bit of a whisper to maybe start to tone things down there, because bar is very asymmetrical, and the pelvis through pregnancy, especially if it is experiencing pain, doesn't love, like, lots and lots of repetitive asymmetrical movement, like lunges and single leg work. So I found, sadly, that I think my time has slowly kind of nearing an end for like hardcore bar classes.
Yeah.
But I think the reformers is such a gentle way to support the body, because, you know, you can do a lot of things in gravity neutral, and thus you can change the springs, you know, and mat Pilates, because it can be, you know, a lot of core and breath awareness and bringing attention to different things. been doing a little bit more foam rolling and using the trigger ball just to get into like the glutes and the inner thighs, which just gets so much tighter in pregnancy. So definitely starting to feel like just subtle body changes.
Yeah.
Which I'm having to just be more mindful of and adapt to. And I went swimming the other day, which was so lovely. I was like, oh, this is nice just to like float in the pool and swim some laps. I have started my pelvic floor exercises.
Great.
Yeah. I was like, okay, I wasn't doing them because I hadn't been told to do them. And I was like, you'd wear our own worst patience, right? And I was like, I just need someone to tell me to do them.
Yes.
So I got one of the physios who's starting for me when I got mat leave to do an assessment and then to like tell me what I need.
Yes. Is this with the intent, because I know your pelvic floor is obviously great, as in it's toned but not too tight, but is this like as the pregnancy continues and as that weight becomes heavier internally, you want to continue to work it?
Yeah, but my pelvic floor is definitely not like, it's not great.
Ah, that's so funny. Yeah, okay.
I mean, so it's so interesting. Like as a physio, definitely one thing that I do see is that, people are everywhere on the spectrum of connective tissue type. Some people have really soft connective tissue. They're really hypermobile and lax. Some people are really tight and, have really stiff, tight muscles. Mm. And the pelvic floor, like when we have more laxity in the pelvic floor, more laxity in the particularly the urethra, there's just like more movement in that. Those women are going to be more susceptible to things like leaking when they sneeze or cough. Because in pregnancy, we lose that reflex that automatically contracts the pelvic floor when we sneeze. So like, never before have I leaked when I've sneezed, but since being pregnant, I'm like, okay, now I have to actually concentrate on contracting the pelvic floor. And like even with that first pregnancy, it was crazy. Like it must be a hormonal thing because it was literally like I remember sneezing and leaking and I was like, oh my God, like
interesting.
That was so early on. Like, but now that I've been working on my pelvic floor, I'm not getting that.
That's why we got to work on our pelvic floor and see what we tell physio.
And I remember like when I was vomiting a few times and right towards the end of that, 14, 15
weeks. I hate that when you vomit and piss yourself at the same time.
Oh my God. I was like, fuck.
Probably nothing more degrading.
I was like having to like really squeeze this shit out of my pelvic floor. And I was like, okay, come on, Caitlin, you can do this. Squeeze your pelvic floor.
Oh, vomiting. So
and then I was like, oh. And then since I've been doing my exercises super diligently, the other day I randomly vomited, but I think it was because I took a zinc tablet and I hadn't eaten and they say not to do that. So I think that made me feel nauseous and I vomited. Mm. And I was like, oh, I didn't even have to think about my pelvic floor.
So good.
And I was like, oh, this stuff works.
Amazing.
There you go. It actually does work.
Funny.
So I definitely think, being someone who is a bit more on that like soft connective tissue, hypermobile side of things, I definitely feel like I'm going to have to be someone who is diligent with pelvic floor and it is going to be really important to make sure I do my exercises postpartum if I want to get back to, exercise and running and stuff, because I definitely feel like I'm more someone who could have those issues because of there's more softness in those connective tissues.
Absolutely.
And for some people, so that pelvic floor just has to work a lot harder. And whilst I have good contraction and good ability to relax because I've learnt those things over time, I have really bad endurance of my pelvic floor. So
that's where I really down for too.
And like the only way to work on that is to be diligent and practice it. And I have just never had the motivation to, and now that I'm pregnant, I'm like, okay, I can actually see why I need to do this now.
Yes.
So I'm like, okay, I'm just going to really lean into this and actually be really good at doing my holds and actually get better at my pelvic floor endurance.
Yeah. Well done.
Yes.
Well done.
Take a leaf
well
out done. Of my own book.
Yes. Actually, I'm going to give them another leaf of your book. If you don't have a poo stool, get one.
Oh, yes, a foot stool. I'll link my one in the
yes
show notes because, oh, my God, such a game changer.
Yeah.
And, yes, definitely, like, I have been struggling sometimes through this pregnancy with constipation. And there's definitely some things that I've tried to implement. Like, oh, yeah, foot stool is such a game changer. Yeah, like a really good footstool, breathing your poos out. So try and use low tone sound or almost like create a back pressure in the back of your throat, like an ujjayi breath, like a or duck motor breath as you're trying to empty. And making sure, because a lot of people don't realize that this, that when we get the urge to pass a bowel motion, our internal anal sphincter muscles are relaxing, and our internal anal sphincter muscles are not under voluntary control. They're like the muscles around our heart. We can't control when they switch on and off. So when we get that urge, we've basically got a half hour window where that internal sphincter is relaxed. And if we miss that window, then we're going to have to strain because that internal muscle is not relaxed. And so we can relax the external sphincter, but nothing's going to come out unless we strain because that internal muscle is not relaxed. So we can't.
Fascinating.
We have to. Like, it's so important to listen to that window and to not just like ignore it, because otherwise you'll be straining or you might just miss that opportunity and have to wait till the next day.
The next day.
Yeah. We might only get that window. Like, it's just, you know, it's, we can't choose when that happens. So.
Wow.
And like a lot of people, it is something that can be conditioned. Like a lot of people, it's, you know, same time every morning or same time after coffee. But, you know, for me, it's never been like that. So I'm like, if I get that urge, it's drop everything. This is test time.
Yes. Isn't that fascinating? Is it usually only once a day?
I think for some people it can be twice. It's more common like in the first 30 minutes after eating.
Yes.
Most common in the mornings.
Yeah.
After eating coffee or exercise.
Yeah.
Interesting. Hey. So especially for mums, like new mums, make sure you listen to that urge.
Very true. Yeah, very true, because you don't want to be straining in that postpartum phase.
Yes.
Is there anything else you wanted to cover for this particular podcast?
No, I think like – I feel like we'll maybe dive into some juicy stuff around like birth prep later down the track.
Yes.
But I feel like – those are the main things, and definitely feel free, you know, if you have questions or if you're going through a similar journey or just want to find out more info, I'll try and leave as much as I can in the show notes, even just around like, you know, what's available and out there for pregnancy, like classes on the coast and where does offer like good pregnancy classes at different ends of the coast and wherever you're based, so that you if you are pregnant and see the value of getting into like the pregnancy specific support, I'll try and leave all of those in the show notes for you guys.
Amazing. I'm so glad we did this.
Thanks so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed today's episode. Don't forget to subscribe and share this with other pregnant women or other women that you think deserve to understand this information. It is my mission to share this knowledge with women, because this is something that I believe that we should all be taught.